The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things. Welcome to The Money Show this evening. It's great to have you with us. We're talking land restitution this evening. The president has been talking about it today and saying it's time to change the constitution. It's time to take land without compensation. And it's not anything new. It's stuff we've heard before, but it forms part of the growing rhetoric around radical economic transformation. Just how much of it is achievable, how much of it is really a goal, and how much of it is a red herring to distract from other more immediate crises that the government faces right now, in particular SASSA, the state-owned distributor of social grants, one wonders. But it's back on the agenda, and back on the agenda in a big way. We'll talk to Grain South Africa about that, but also touch on the fact that the drought is well and truly over, and certainly in Gauteng and the northern parts of the old maize-growing areas of South Africa. But armyworm, we haven't heard anything about armyworm for a bit. We'll pick up on that tonight as well. Markets had a soft today as the currency strengthened, the JSE down about 0.25% on the day, but the rand moving better than 16 to the pound as economic data points in the United Kingdom point towards slowing growth there. So we'll talk about that this evening with Garth Curry. He is with Sanlam Private Wealth. We'll bring you some of the best bets. Plus, I've got 2,000 rand in the Brutal Biz Quiz to give to you if you are the whiz of the biz quiz. So do stay around. Do play with us this evening. And they ask some truly brutal questions. My producer disappeared for a bit this afternoon and went and sat in a cave somewhere and divined some of the more vicious questions we've seen in the history of the biz quiz. But then it is the Brutal Biz Quiz and there are 2,000 rand up for grabs. So There is 2,000 rand up for grabs. I beg your pardon. There is 2,000 rand up for grabs. So get your game face on and play the biz quiz with us later on.
The Money Show. The Friday File.
Our Friday File this evening is all about the issues around land restitution. President Jacob Zuma today once again calling for a constitutional amendment to the land issue, saying the willing buyer, willing seller principle, which has been used so far, just simply isn't working. It's not working fast enough. Government doesn't have enough money in order to make it work the way it should. And it's high time there's land restitution without compensation. Jannie de Villiers, Chief Executive at Grain South Africa. I'm sure you've heard it before, Jannie de Villiers, but is the tone changing? Is the tone of the discussion changing at all?
Hi, good evening, Bruce. Yes, this has been ongoing for a long time, and I think, we're all a bit frustrated with the fact that we're not making progress and that all this sort of swords keep on hanging over everybody's heads. So, in a sense, we would like to see something going forward, yeah. But it is strange for me that the president make an announcement like this and a strong statement like this, following Parliament's voting the other day that voted in favor of the Constitution. It seems like our president is now, challenging the Constitution all the time. And this is not good for, investment and confidence and all these sort of things. Farmers, they borrow 5-8 million rand at a time, put it in the ground, wait for the rain, and then they feed the nation with whatever the soil produces. And this is not good news for the agricultural sector at all.
You say you're frustrated at the lack of land restitution. Many people listening to this would say, but hold on a second, Jannie. Then why not do something about land restitution? Why not be more proactive as a representative of agriculture in South Africa? Many South Africans would see organized agriculture as a stumbling block in this process rather than as a facilitator of transformation.
Yeah, Bruce, I think we are of the opinion that we would have been long gone past the goals that the government set to be, at 30% by 2014 or whatever that date was, if it wasn't for all the corruption. So there's a lot of land at the moment in the market, because of the drought, more than normal. And we are not seeing government stepping forward to buy land at all. And I think this is, what is the problem? Yeah, there's a constitution that says you can go and buy land, you can buy it on the market, you can do expropriation with compensation, but it is not happening. So it sounds like government, or the president in this instance, not maybe government, but the president has changed his tune now. He doesn't want to pay for it. And this is going to have massive impact on the land prices itself. I think sometimes the people don't want to hear all the things that we're doing. You know, we're running huge programs with government today to make sure that the farmers that gets the land gets, they can go sustainably on in producing food for the nation. The problem that they have is none of these farmers can get title deeds. They just farm government land and nobody's willing to borrow money to them to plant something. So they're not unsuccessful because they can't farm. It is because they can't get access to finance to plant a crop.
No, I mean, look, the land issue is massively emotive. It's a very, very emotional issue. It's a very strong political rallying cry. It goes way back into South Africa's political history about land ownership is absolutely pivotal to the well-being of ordinary South Africans. All of this we hear. Your assertion that the process of land distribution is corrupted, just give me more detail on that and upon what you base that very, very strong assertion.
Yeah, I think if we take the amount of money that government showed that they have used in the procurement of land, if you take that and you divide that by the, let's say, the average cost of land over the years that they've spent that money, they could have bought half of South Africa already. So this is why we're saying, you know, they keep on referring to the 8% that they actually bought, but they bought it at such prices with all sorts of in-betweeners, and you know there were a lot of people coming in between the government and the farmer who actually sells off the piece of land that they bought. So there are a lot of these accusations and proof that there was a lot of corruption involved in this process thus far.
Unfortunately, that sort of, I mean, whether or not you're absolutely right on those particular facts, Yanni, I mean, the political rhetoric of the moment is one about radical economic transformation. And that is the rallying cry that is around at the moment. It's not just the agricultural sector that would be affected, though. I mean, much land is bonded. You talk about the fact that farmers can borrow between 5 and 8 million rand a year, depending on the size of the farm and the sort of crops they plant, in order to get those crops in the ground. If you had something like land redistribution without compensation, that would lead to the individuals owning these assets going bankrupt. And when I looked at farming debt, I think 2015 figures suggest that farmers in total owe something like 133 billion rand. But half of that, more than half of that, is held by the commercial banks. The land bank has got a big exposure to that. And there are other big books of credit as well to the co-ops. If you take land away from people who owe lots of money into the financial system and they go bust, well, the financial system then is put at strain. This isn't just about farming. It's about a systemic shock for the entire economy.
Yeah, Bruce, no, the banks will be in not just big trouble, in bigger than that. So you're 100% correct in your assumption saying that this is not just about farming. And you can imagine what's going to happen to the rural areas where the farming sector are actually the livelihoods of a lot of people in those areas, and this is where you found most of the poor people in this country. And I mean, we've seen what happened in Zimbabwe with land reform without compensation, and I mean, they still, you know, even with this fantastic season that we have, they still short of food.
Now, what this fantastic season that you're talking about, let's move on just a little bit. I'd like an update from you in terms of the state of agriculture. The summer rain's been good in some cases. I'm sure some farmers have probably had too much rain. It never rains, but it pours. Give us a sense of it, please, the state of play in terms of the main grain-producing areas of the country.
Yeah, the conditions in the north is actually fantastic in general. I mean,
When you say the north, just define that for me.
Yes, it is north of the Karoo. You can say, you know, KZN, Eastern Cape, Free State, Northwest, you know, Limpopo, Mpumalanga. This is where we produce the maize in South Africa. The Western Cape is winter rains, and this is they only going to start planting in April, May. So I'm referring now to the north. We received fantastic rain, in some instances too much, but I think, you know, we rather sit with a wet problem than a dry problem when it comes to producing food for the nation. So yes, it is looking fantastically. The first crop estimate came out at 13.9 million tons estimated, and this is like, I think, the third highest that we ever had in this country. So after the drought, this was actually good news for farmers to see the quantities, but now obviously the market is working, so because of the huge supply, you know, the prices are dropping substantially.
I mean, that's not so great for farmers, but boy, for the rest of us who consume the sweat of the brow of the farmer via the food they produce, it's good news from a food inflation point of view and from a sustainability point of view. Give me also a sense, please, of armyworm. I chatted to you a couple of weeks ago, and you were concerned that armyworm had been tracked about 100 k's north of Pretoria and was affecting particularly non-genetically modified crops, traditional crops. And that, ironically, was having the biggest impact, of course, on emerging black farmers.
Yeah, we keep on detecting it. I think they reported today at a meeting with the minister that we had that they also discovered it now in KwaZulu-Natal. So it is almost in all the provinces. But, Bruce, I think the South African crop is fairly well protected through one, GMOs, that we plant a lot of that. Which is a resistance to this worm, and then the commercial farmers use chemicals effectively to spray it, and we haven't assessed the damage yet. But it, you know, I think individual farmers have had some damage, but you know, for the crop as a whole, I don't think South Africa need to worry that, you know, the worms are going to eat all of our maize and we're going to run short again. Because we've got a huge crop. But there has been substantial damage to individual farmers, especially, you know, those guys producing like sweet corn, and we heard on sorghum, you know, those things who are not genetically modified is first being attacked.
Now, I mean, is it too early to say that the crisis is averted, or are we still at risk?
Yeah, no, I think there's a team out there at the moment with all sorts of surveillance equipment and stuff to check what was the, you know, the distribution and whether there was, you know, what was the extent of the damage. They haven't come back with a number yet, but I don't think it is, for the country as a whole, I don't think it is substantial.
There we go. Good news on that particular front. Jannie de Villiers, Chief Executive at Grain South Africa. Interesting perspectives on land reform, land redistribution. And the President's comments today that we need to step up land reform. And I don't think anybody's going to argue with that particular point. But again, so often it is the devil that is in the detail and on these things. And the risks of wholesale land redistribution without compensation go so far beyond just the agricultural sector, whether or not farmers lose confidence and land prices plummet. And maybe that's part of a strategy, but the knock-on effect of what happens when you have unfettered redistribution of assets upon which there is debt. So in other words, the farmer owes money to the bank, and the farmer's land is taken, and there's no compensation paid. The farmer goes to the bank and says, terribly sorry, but I no longer have the asset to produce the returns that you need to get paid, so I'm declaring myself insolvent. The bank then says, well, I'm going to have to write off that 8 million rand because I'm not going to get it from anywhere else, and it starts a ball rolling. What should happen, what will happen, should sustainable farming in South Africa fail because of expropriation? Can't we learn lessons from Zimbabwe? Says Peter. I think that was the point, Peter, that Jannie de Villiers made. The Henry says, I agree with Zuma and the EFF for the first time. Black people don't have anything, so if the financial system goes bust, then we don't lose anything because a lot of banks don't finance us anyway, says Henry. That is a perspective. But Henry, again, quite a simplistic view, forgive me for pointing that out. It's not about banks going bust. It's about the entire system collapsing around your ears if the banks do go bust. And yeah, just look north of us at examples in terms of failed states. We can go down that route if you like.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Garth Curry from Sunland Private Wealth is our market commentator this evening. It's been an interesting week on the markets, Garth Curry. Give us a perspective as to the fluctuations. I mean, overall, I think we're probably down on where we were this time last week.
Good evening, Bruce. It's been a really volatile week, especially I think Trump gave it a nice boost with his speech. But thereafter, people also got to see how is he going to raise the capital on the infrastructure spend and so on that he wants to spend. So, you know, and cut cat taxes at the same time. So I think we've seen some good volatility ahead of the speech, and turnover was a little light. Also, we've had the financial year end, where we had a lot of people, you know, Monday and Tuesday were having to pay or settle up their capital gains taxes from the previous year, and also some people were paying their loans that they'd maybe given to their trust because of the interest rate differential.
All of this stuff is very higher grade, Garth, and this is the sort of thing that your clients have to worry about. The rest of us schmucks don't have to worry about it. But how does that have an impact on markets? It forces the sale of some shares, it forces the purchase, the rebalancing of portfolios, I suppose, as people get the money they need in order to fulfill these debt obligations they have.
Correct, Bruce. People need to pay the taxes from the previous year. So people had to pay by the 28th of February, people had to pay the taxes and capital gain taxes from the previous year. And that, in selling those shares, brought the markets down to some extent. And we saw that in the last week. And then Trump's speech came through and we saw the US market and the foreign markets having a good boost. And we followed suit and followed up and in indicating that he's going to spend money on infrastructure, pushed the resources up. And also we saw that the currency started to strengthen a little bit. Purely from an American point of view, them spending more money in infrastructure, all your mining resources and your copper prices and your iron ore prices went better.
But it didn't last very long, though. I mean, I just look at it today and all of that exuberance and hubris seems to have evaporated as quickly as it came.
It has, Bruce. It's come back a bit. Today is Friday. People are taking profits out of it and also saying, where does he find the money to do it? If he's going to cut the taxes, and where is he going to find the money in America to do so? But people are also focusing that we've got the Fed in the U.S. meeting to discuss interest rates, and it almost feels like a foregone conclusion that interest rates will go up in America on the 14th and 15th of March.
Now, previously, when we've had this level of anticipation about American interest rates going up, our currency has reacted very badly. It's weakened quite sharply. Right now, the opposite is happening. What is going on in our currency market that is leading to the relative strength in the rand versus the pound, the dollar, the euro, against a backdrop of threatened rate hikes and likely rate hikes too?
The difference, I think, Bruce, has been the strength of the resources holding up. And there's been some buying into those resources, so the resource currencies, being the Australian dollar and the rand and so on, have been holding up extremely well because the people have been looking for those type of stocks. We've also seen a little bit of better earnings. You know, people are looking for good earnings coming out from our banks. We've seen some of the trading updates. We've got First Rand and Old Mutual, and we've got Sunlum RMB coming out with results next week, which will be better than expected.
Also, if you looked at Nedbank's South Africa results, they were good. Standard Bank's South Africa results, they were good. Nedbank was let down by other African operations. Standard Bank was let down by Liberty. The core banking operations of these very conservatively, frustratingly conservatively run banks who are reluctant to lend. But you look at their results and you look at the drop-off in defaults and things, and you go, well, these guys actually, they know their customers, they know what they're doing, and they're being very, very cautious about the way in which they run those businesses.
Correct, Bruce. I think they ranked one of the top banking system in the world. So we're seeing that, and we're seeing some foreigners still holding on to their South African banking stocks. But we've also seen the trend of some of the global financial stocks picking up because as interest rates normalize globally, your margins in your banks improve. So people have been switching into some of the emerging markets that produce these resources, and they've been looking at the more cyclical type share of banking shares, because as interest rates globally, or especially led by America, starting to normalize, your earnings on those banks start improving. So a lot of the banking shares in America, Bank of America, as an example, Wells Fargo, you've seen those shares go from $9 to nearly $25 a share on Bank of America over the last 2 or 3 months. So there's been quite a demand for more cyclical type shares and share investments, because a lot of your core value type investments have really not have been taking a bit of strain. And also on the other side, with the rand being so strong against the pound, a lot of our dual listeds that are priced in pounds have been under pressure because of the rand strength against the pound. I mean, the pound sitting at nearly around about 16 to the rand, 16 to the pound at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it has been extraordinary. And there was some negative economic data out of the United Kingdom this morning, which put the pound on the back foot once again. A sense of retailers, I mean, Pick n Pay, ShopRite, Woolies, Massmart, all on the day were moving strong. And I know one day is very hard to tell which way anything is going. But the food retail sector in particular seems to be in a pretty good space.
They've been picking up, Bruce, and we saw, as yourself and David picked up earlier, that those retailers have all picked up, Woolworths and so on, or back at 72 Rand, and picked up about 1.5% to 2%. ShopRite, Spar were better today. a lot of it comes down to if the banks are doing better, the feeling is there'll be more credit released to the man in the street. So it's not necessary that it looks like the economy could do, look, and the government's saying GDP growth in this in the country will improve possibly to just above 1%. And in that space, with banks lending being a little bit on freer and lending credit, we should see a pickup in the retail sales. So we that's where the market is starting to see a bit of value because they've been bombed for so long.
They must certainly have. I mean, there's a quiet narrative building. And I say quiet narrative because people don't want to be accused of being stupid or overly optimistic or being Pollyanna-ish. But a couple of people I talk to from time to time privately are beginning to talk about growth accelerating beyond 1.3%. 6 months ago, that seemed an unlikely target. And now it seems like quite an easy target to reach.
Bruce, I'd love to say that that's the case. It's not going to be that easy, but I think with the rainfalls that we've been having, we've had a record maize crop, one of the best maize crops, as you heard earlier, your gentleman that spoke earlier saying that we've, and despite the mealyworm and everything, we've still had a record maize crop. That definitely helps, other than the Cape was taking strain in that space still. The freeing of credit to a lesser extent, the results from the banks coming a little better, all that can help in the right direction. I think the only factor that there's a lot of concern is, you know, from a global point of view, there's still a lot of uncertainties of what happens with Europe and their elections coming up over this next year or so. And locally, the biggest risk, of course, is the political side. There's a lot of pressure on the political front and on the Treasury to maintain the taxes. And we've been through that in the week before with the budget speech and so on and where we're at. People are still looking at the dividend taxes and everything and what implication that will have on the way people do business going forward. But I think the big issue here is the political situation that's yep. in front of us.
And that is the one negative. It's a big negative and is one that is playing on the minds not only of investors, but South Africans, even South Africans without too much money, feel it extraordinarily, of course. I do see that Oak Bay today issued a statement saying the company's noted media reports regarding the possible closure of its banking facilities held with Bank of Baroda. Oak Bay Resources says it's not aware of any communications from Bank of Baroda in this regard and shareholders will be advised accordingly should there be any change in this position. But Bloomberg did report three independent sources yesterday saying that the accounts of the Guptas and any companies associated with them were being closed. Today, Oak Bay is saying, well, ATM cards are still working.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things. We'll play the Brutal Biz quiz in a bit. And I hope you've got your game face on. I really do. I hope you've been sort of doing mental push-ups and sit-ups and planking. It's so difficult tonight, you have to be planking in preparation for tonight's Brutal Biz quiz. We have got 2,000 Rand to give away. So, seriously, guys, you need to bring your game on. We already do. On the next Money Show, I'm talking to a man called John Kay. He's the author of a brand new book called The Long and the Short of It. It's a guide to finance and investment for what he calls normally intelligent people who aren't in the industry. It's easy to read. It's massively accessible. And it's a nice refresher course for many people who are investing. And if you've never started, it's a good place to start. Also, tune in for Alon Rays, the founder and chief executive of Rays Corp in our Make Money Mondays personal edition. He's going to tell us what he thinks and how he thinks about money and why he thinks about it the way he does.
Money Show.
Time now for the best bits of the Money Show. At least some of the best bits, because there were lots of really good bits this week, but we'll play you some of those. If you missed something on the show this week, you get the podcast free via our website or via the Life button on our app, either Cape Talk or 702, whatever your preference. Tons of Money Shows there for you to devour at your leisure. Here are just some of the highlights from the past week. This week, the Reserve Bank Governor, Lesetja Ganyaho, announced that there are shares available for you to buy in the central bank. Now, they've long been able to be a shareholder in the Reserve Bank, but he's made 149,000 South African Reserve Bank shares available to buy. Some people pretty chuffed to own a Reserve Bank shares, even though the dividend isn't particularly spectacular. Just not many cents at all. There's no real way to measure the value because you don't really get a vote on interest rates. You don't get a vote on interest rates at all. So what's the point of owning a share in the Reserve Bank? This week, I managed to catch up with longtime Reserve Bank shareholder David Sylvester, and I asked him why he was invested.
For me, it was a novelty purchase. They were listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange until May 2002, mm-hmm. and they'd been listed since, I think, 1928, when the bank was first founded. And it was unusual because most reserve banks are owned by the state. So this was fairly unusual. The shareholders are entitled to a dividend of 10 cents a share, and I bought them really just for the novelty value. They're not I wouldn't say they're a great investment, because unlike other banks, shareholders don't benefit or participate in the growth or profits of the company. And the Reserve Bank is structured such that it may make profits, but they certainly don't go to shareholders. They go to the state, or they stay in reserves.
So what is the purpose? I mean, you're allowed to vote on non-executive directors. Do you get invited for lunch at least? Other than a novelty purchase, there's got to be some sort of upside to holding the shares.
You get invited to the annual general meeting. You obviously get copies of the annual report and the governor's speech. But once you've bought them, you pretty much got them for life, because there is very little liquidity. There are only 2 million shares in issue. And if everybody bought 10,000 shares, they would only have a maximum of 200 shareholders. So it really is, it's a novelty.
That is David Sylvester, long-term shareholder of the Reserve Bank. Space tourism. Now, this was a great discussion, looking increasingly possible. Numerous global companies planning to take visitors to orbit with the view of eventually settling on Mars. And, of course, we know that Elon Musk wants to be one of the first people to send a trip to Mars with settlers. But in the meantime, he's got his first 2 paying customers to go beyond the orbit of the International Space Station. If it happens next year, as it's slated to do, these will be the first people to go beyond the space tourists. We've seen, we said, other astronauts. 500 people have been into space so far, but we haven't seen space tourists go beyond the orbit of the International Space Station. The futurist and partner at Tomorrow Today, Graham Codrington, says science fiction's becoming fact.
I think what NASA has always argued, and now SpaceX and others argue, is that in order to achieve this, in order to make this thing happen, flying tourists around the moon, 2 of them on their own in an autonomous vehicle. They're not going to be professional astronauts with them. In order to do that, we've got to take about 20 other steps in science. And that's going to improve our cell phones, our cars, our homes, and our lives. So it's worth doing. So that we can improve our lives through science.
I mean, and that's precisely what exploration and technology has done throughout history. We have technologies today courtesy of the first moon landings, for example.
Absolutely. And that's why I love what I do, which is to look at all these things in the future and bring it back to our world today.
Graham Codrington from the futurist and partner Tomorrow Today. Isaac Mopatlane, chief executive of BCX, newly merged, of course, with Telkom Business Connection. He was our Shapeshifter guest on Wednesday. He and his late twin brother Benjamin, they founded Business Connection. And boy, they must have been some of the naughtiest boys you'd ever meet at school.
My dad was an educator, and my mom was a matron at a hospital. But I recall our first hiding we got from our parents, that we had sold our actual textbooks after we had passed grade 1 or standard 1 in those days, or standard 2, whatever it was. And we had actually got money out of that. And I remember our parents scolding us for it. And we had to actually give the money back and give the books for free. So I kind of think we've always sold stuff from a very young age. And when we moved to CBC Kimberley, and I must say, to some of the boarders I went to school with, I must apologize, because our dad used to send us biltong, and if it got written by rats, we used to just clean it up and sell it to some of our boarders that we went to school with. So we kind of always been selling stuff to people all the time.
Did you learn ethics then at CBC Kimberley? Was that your ethical training?
I think the Irish brothers were quite hard on us. I think in those days we had Irish brothers, and corporal punishment was still the in thing. But certainly, I do the CBC Kimberley experience, 5 years there, and I think it was in the 80s, if you think about it. Tough time in our country, certainly toughened me up. And
how did you get, though, in the apartheid era South Africa, in a town like Kimberley, into a white school, a Catholic school in
Well,
Kimberley?
Initially, my folks wanted us to send us to CBC Pretoria or St. Albans, but in those days, they had racial quotas, so most of these schools could only take 10 blacks in those days. So the next best thing was Kimberley, which happened to be a great adventure, learn a lot about life, independence, and be able to do stuff for oneself. And I think that's where our love for computers actually started.
It started at the age of 12.
Yeah, that's right. And the BBC, most people, and I tell them that BBC actually used to manufacture computers. So
the BBC?
BBC, as the British Broadcasting Corporation. And we had those BBC computers, and there was an Irish brother, a South African Irish brother by the name of Paddy O'Brien, who actually took a liking to Ben and I, and we literally spent all our hours after hours. We had the keys to the computer room while other boarders didn't have. So that's really the real passion started there, and it's been quite a journey.
It's been an extraordinary journey, a tragic one as well. Ben died a couple of years ago, but Isaac's still going strong. And if you want an inspiring story to share with people over this weekend, please go and just, if you listen to one thing this week, go and listen to the chat with Isaac Mopatlane. It is one of the most endearing discussions I've had on The Money Show ever, and I've been doing this for a while. And people have been emailing me and been sending me tweets and been sending me all sorts of messages verifying my assessment, and like, what a lovely guy. And it doubles the tragedy, frankly, of Ben's very, very early death.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Time for the Biz Quiz with MTN. I've got 2,000 Rand burning a hole in the palm of my hand. I want to give that to you if you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz with MTN this evening. If I'd asked you this question on Sunday, I would not expected you to know the answer. But by Monday night, I think most people in the film-loving world would have known. Which company employs Brian Cullinan? Brian Cullinan works for whom? I think he still works there. Give us a call now on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567.
It's time to put your business knowledge to the test. The Biz Quiz with MTN on The Money Show.
Let's play the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday night. 2,000 Rand up for grabs, and everybody wants to play tonight. Anthony, who does Brian Cullinan work for?
Evening, Bruce, that would be KPMG.
Maybe he does after being fired by the last guys, but no, I'm afraid not, Anthony. Let's try Philip. Who does he work for? At least, who do we think he still works for?
I think he does. It's PwC.
PwC, absolutely right. Brian Cullinan, of course, is the unfortunate auditor who handed Warren Beatty the wrong envelope in Sunday night's Academy Awards, led to the wrong film being announced as Best Picture. There's a school near Winterton that claims to be the only choir school in South Africa. It is called?
Drakensberg Boys Choir.
I thought this was hard. Okay, Philip, you're doing very well. This week I interviewed Louis Sobala, one of the first black kids to go to the Drakensberg Boys School Choir. He's an alumni of the school. Which is the second largest bank in India?
Bank of Baroda.
Are you sure it's not the State Bank of India?
I have no idea of any banks in India. It's the only bank I know.
Exactly. Well, it is the Bank of Baroda. You're absolutely right. The State Bank of India is the biggest, and Bank of Baroda is the second biggest. Bloomberg this week reporting that even it doesn't want to do business with the Guptas anymore. How much of a dividend will you get if you own one Reserve Bank share?
10 cents.
No, wait, Philip. I was telling my producer that she'd gone vicious on us. You're getting all the hard ones. Oh, I've got to find something to catch you. All right, here's one. Which U.S. company that listed this week could be the first ever to list exclusively non-voting stock on the U.S. Stock Exchange?
No, now you've got me.
No, I mean, I don't want to get you. What is the first card game you taught your kids?
Uno.
No, okay, no, let's try again. What's the other first card game you taught your kids where you've got cards exactly the same and they put them down at the same time and they shout?
Snap.
Is that the first company to list non-voting shares on the
yes.
New York Stock? Jeez, I don't know how you knew that, Philip. You're a genius.
Sure.
Philip just took the Biz Quiz and wiped the floor with it. Congratulations to you, Philip. Snap is the right answer. Snap listed. It is the company that owns Snapchat, of course. Well done to Philip, who is the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz.